El siguiente es un programa pagado por el anunciante y 1600 AM no se hace responsable por las opiniones reflejadas en su contenido.
This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome to All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlow Dermogradichian. We've had a pretty active week with activities throughout the community and at Fresno State. Last night, we had a wonderful concert to benefit the Mayor Huis, our home House of Hope program. And upcoming, we have two more events for the community. One will be on Friday, February the 28th at 7:30 p.m., when pianist Nara Avedisian will be coming to Fresno State to perform in the Young Armenian Talent Series. And she's an artist that's been acclaimed throughout the world. She's originally from Armenia, but now living in the United States. Tickets are required, but they are available through the Armenian Studies Program or through the Keyboard Concert Series at Fresno State. So you can find tickets for that either one, or you can just come that night. The doors open at 7 o'clock, and you can come and purchase tickets. It's at the Concert Hall at Fresno State. And then on the next day, on Saturday, February the 29th, the Armenian Studies Program is holding its Armenian American Musical Heritage Day with two events in one afternoon from 1 o'clock to 3 p.m. There'll be a public scanning event where people in the community will be invited to bring various materials related to Armenian American music. That would include things like sheet music, records, any kind of information about the history of music in Fresno, music stores, all of that kind of information. And then at 3:30 the same night, that same afternoon, Richard Hagopian will be engaged in a discussion and performance with Dr. Yekdan Türkyılmaz, and all of those events will take place on Saturday at the University Business Center at Fresno State, and it's free parking and free admission. Then just a reminder that our Armenian Studies program banquet is coming up on March 22nd. Today I have as my guest Reverend Nersis Balabanyan. He's the pastor of the Pilgrim Armenian Congregational Church here in Fresno. Welcome to our program.
Thank you. Thank you, Barlow.
It's good to have you here. I want to start off a little with your background. I know that you were born in Aleppo, Syria.
Yes.
And I'd like to know what the Armenian community was like. How long did you live there? And then what caused you to move, or to your family? Or are they still there?
All right. Good question. First of all, thank you for inviting me. And I'm really happy that this radio program started 3 months ago. This is wonderful. I was born in Aleppo because, as any other Armenians from Aleppo, because of the genocide, and my grandfather, Balaban Hoxha Balabanyan, and his family, they were on the way from Aintep to Aleppo. So that's why my father was born there in Aintep, 5 years old, when he came to Aleppo. So here I am, second generation in Aleppo, raised and went to Armenian schools, to cultural places and churches. My mother was Orthodox, my father Apostolic, what I mean. My father was Protestant, Evangelical. So I was raised with both traditions and very involved in choirs, in music. Music is an important part of my life. My father was a violin player, so he required us to learn musical instruments, all the children. We are three siblings, brothers and one sister. We all play music. So our home was a musical place. So that's in a nutshell my background in Aleppo.
And what was the community like then? Because of course we're going to talk later about what's happening now or in the last few years, but at that time Aleppo was a thriving Armenian community.
Yeah, we're talking 1960s, 70s, 80s. Those years were an important years in Aleppo where the schools, so many Armenian schools, so many Armenian clubs, Hopenetmen, Homenetmen, Hoyechet, you know, Ramgavar, the Vasporagan, you know, there's so many different, even football, well, we call them football there, but you soccer. Here you call it soccer, you know, groups, and they were competing with the Syrian groups, with Syrian, you know. So the Armenian community was vibrant, very active. At least two, three choirs, classical choirs, very good choirs, you know, and many bands and many dance, Armenian dance groups. So I'm talking about like 100,000 Armenians living there. So it was really vibrant. Where the time I grew up was very vibrant, not only in Aleppo, but Kesap. Kesap was an Armenian, for Armenians was like Dilijan for Hayastansis. You know, you go from Yerevan to Dilijan to the mountains for summer. So Kesap became a very important for Halepsis.
And you would go there often?
Often I went because of my grandfather. Mm-hmm. My grandfather, when he was in Aintab, part of his learning in Aintab College was they said you need to do some internship. So why don't you go to Kesap? There's an Armenian community because he was learning an education. Mm-hmm. So he went from Aintab to Kesap during 1800s, late 1800s, the beginning of 1900s. So when he came, when all this massacre happened and so on, when we were in Aleppo, he said to my father, let's go to Kesap and teach the Aleppo Armenians that there's an Armenian village, will be great for recreation and so on. So Kesap became a second home to me when I was growing up.
And so the first language for Armenians was Armenian. And of course, the second language was Arabic. Probably the third language was French. Or English?
English. Well, you have to decide in Syria which way you will go. So, of course, the first language is mother tongue Armenian. Arabic is second language. Quickly, you need to learn. And you see the confusion, one from right to left, one from left to right, you know, the alphabets. Right. And then the English came, or French. And so, three languages. And because my grandmother was raised in Aintab and she spoke Turkish, so the Turkish language became part of my education as well, not written or but more speaking Turkish or hearing Turkish language.
And you went through high school in Aleppo?
Yes, all the way from Haygazian Elementary School to Karenyepe Askayin Cemaran that I graduated in 1977. Mm-hmm. Because I was so much involved in music and theology, eventually I found a way to leave Syria and come to United States of America in 1980 to study music and theology.
So what was the, was it hard for you to make that decision to leave? Because that seems like it would be a difficult thing to leave the family, or they maybe didn't want you to leave.
You put your finger in the right place. My dad was so against that, you know. I don't have a son who will go to America. I don't have a son for United States. Right. So, you know, it's amazing how God convinced my father. I was really praying. I said, I don't want to go without my father's blessing. And one day he came, said, you know, son, I see so much in you, the music passion, and to serve the Lord. Here's my blessing. So that's why I came. But here's what he did. Every summer, he said, you need to come back to Aleppo. Every summer, he sent me a plane ticket. Instead of staying in the United States for a whole year and wait in September to start my second semester, I went back for 2 months to Aleppo and Kesap to stay with my family, or because I was studying theology, my church used me as a camp director, because in Kesap we had a retreat center. Mm-hmm. So I served there for many years, you know.
And Aleppo was, nobody living in Aleppo in that period would have thought what the future would hold. I mean, this was a community that was thriving, and nobody could have foreseen the future.
In fact, when Lebanese Civil War happened, 1975 to 1991, Syria became a self place for Lebanese Armenians to come to Aleppo. Now, Aleppo Armenians opened their places, their homes. Even the Syrian government allowed Lebanese drivers, it's not a taxi.
Right.
You know, you have a license that is not a taxi, right, to be used as a taxi driver in Syria. So they came and think, no one was thinking that this is going to happen, that Lebanon will be a safe place for the Syrians now to go and stay there.
And the standard of living was good? Were there poor Armenians there? Were there, how would you say
that's
that?
A very good, the standard, well, if I look to my grandfather, Balaban Hoxha, who was a teacher who came, in his pocket you will find bread, maybe onion, maybe some raisin. I mean, I'm talking very poor society in Aleppo. But they all want education. Education was extremely important for them. They strive, they work hard. And you will rarely you will find, I mean, of course, they were poor Armenians. But most of the Armenians went to the middle class and upper middle class.
And especially compared even with the Arabs, right?
Especially mechanics. any cars, any things that would need to be renovated or something, they even from Damascus, they come to Aleppo because they know that the Armenian workers are the best they can do. So what a tragedy where we are now when it comes to Syria.
And at that time, the Armenians were looked on by the government as being a very loyal and a very good element in society, right? And vice versa.
Very much, because they opened their homes to us. The Arabs opened homes to us. Mm-hmm. So on the other hand, we were very productive community in Syria. So the Syrian government welcomed us. As long as you weren't political, the Syrian government was very happy with us. Don't enter in politics and so on. So, you know, all the clubs, you know, even Ramgabar or Tashnak, you know, officially they shouldn't be working because in Syria there was only one party, was Baath Party. But they knew that the Armenians have some political, but as long as they didn't interfere in the governmental issues, they gave us the freedom.
And how about the Armenians within the community? Is it pretty typical of any of the diasporan communities? I mean, yes, you're all Armenians, but there you are identified by Protestant, Orthodox, or Apostolic, political party or not? Or was there a little bit more of a sense of community in the sense of belonging as an Armenian?
After the Ottoman Empire had this millet concept, what Hayrenov, Hamayink Gogochvi, Hamayink. I don't know how you translate that to English. Denomination? Community, no, it's not a denomination. Yeah. It's more than a denomination. Yeah. Because denomination doesn't have Hamayink Abed, you know. Because when we lost our kingdoms or Ishkhanutyunner Chuneink, you know, the head of the church was not just representing the spiritual part of the church, but also the legal parts of the family. Let me give you an example. We do weddings in Aleppo, right? When we do weddings, all the churches, apostolic, Catholic, or evangelical, when we do weddings, we give permission, like we do it here in America. But the difference in America, when the couple have problems, marital couples, they come to the church counsel them. Eventually, if it becomes so problematic, if they want a divorce, the church gives divorce and not the government.
Mm, yeah.
So the church has a lot of authority supporting the families financially, or let's say there is a divorce, the kids, where will stay the kids and so on. The church has a saying about that, right? What will happen. So as you see, the church is involved in the community life,
And that's the legacy from the Ottoman period.
It came from the Ottoman Empire, right. You're right.
And so when you decided to come to America, you said you were motivated by music, but did you have in the back of your mind already that you wanted to become a pastor or a clergyman?
Yes. The whole conversion became, I mean, when I say conversion, you know, I was raised in an Armenian Christian family, but you don't take seriously some of the stuff. You know, you're in 1975, we had a retreat, like a camp in Kesab, and there was a very vibrant preacher who was, you know, challenging us to take the Christianity more than like an inheritance, you know, you inherit it. Just think about it. Is this a commitment and so on? So my life was changed that time in that camp. Now, I didn't know that I was going to be a minister or something, but I became, let's say, a dedicated Christian, taking seriously Christianity and to follow Christ after that.
And then when you came to the United States, what did you do? Enter seminary or?
In the beginning, no. In the beginning, you're not asking me where did I come?
Yeah.
I came to Kansas.
Yeah.
I know you're going to laugh. how many Armenians you will find in a Kansas?
Not
too many. It was middle of United States, Salina, Kansas. If you look to the map, USA, it's exactly middle of USA. Yeah. Why there? Because Kansas Wesleyan University, it's a private Wesleyan university, has a wonderful music department. In that school, there was an Armenian professor, John Khanjan, Dr. John Khanjan. So he came to Middle East one summer. And then when he saw me playing the piano, leading choir, doing things, he said, "Don't you like to study music?" I said, "I would love to study music." He said, "I'll send you I-20, you know, all the papers for students to apply." I'm in a Yerazi Beseskasav. It was like a dream. Mm-hmm. Is this going to happen or not, you know? And step by step, the doors open and so on. So I came to study music first. It was a music composition, piano performance. That was my major.
Was your first time in the United States. What were your first impressions of living in Kansas and as a student and coming from Aleppo to...
Can you see me, Barlow, in Kansas?
Yeah.
You know, like I land. It's not California that they know. When you say I'm Armenian, in California, they'll say, "Oh, we know Armenians. We know William Sarian."
Or they might even say you're Iranian, but at least they know it's out of the country.
Well, for the Kansas people, like, where? Well, first, I'm not coming from Armenia, so it's confusing when you tell them. Uh-huh. When you tell them I'm from Syria, where is Syria? Well, north of Israel. Ah, now we know where it is. So geographically, when you tell them Israel, they will understand that. And then I say I'm Armenian. Now, some of the elderly people said, we used to pray for starving Armenians. During the genocide, missionaries did a lot of work within the Kansas churches.
Right.
So that was interesting. Elderlies knew, not the new generation.
Right, exactly.
That's
something they can remember.
They can remember.
The parents said, "Eat everything off of your plate because they're starving Armenians."
The starving Armenians.
So then you entered into that was a seminary.
That was not seminary.
Music.
It's like Fresno State.
Right.
It's a bachelor art university that you can take music degree. It was a bachelor degree in music, minor in religion. So, because in our system, if you're going to study theology, first you need to have a bachelor degree, then you go to Master of Divinity. So my bachelor was in music and minor in religion.
And then where did you go for the master's degree?
For the master's, I wanted to go back to Beirut, to Neri School of Theology, and that was 1984. There was a lot of kidnapping happening in 1984, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Terry White, Benjamin Weir, there was a lot of American professors being kidnapped, and even Armenians were being killed in the 1984, if you remember those years. So there was a very tough time for me to go back to Beirut. I came back to SMU, Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas, and I did my theology there.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that period, because 1985 was the first time that I visited the Middle East, and actually I flew to Damascus. We went to Jordan, Amman, Jordan, and from Amman we had to get our a visa to get into Syria.
Yes,
to go to Damascus and then Halab, and then we wanted to get to Beirut, but they said, you know, if you go, it's not a good idea because there were militias along the road.
This
was the year that TWA
547
had been kidnapped.
Yeah.
And I mean, and we actually ended up taking that flight. We'll be continuing in just a moment with Reverend Nerses Balabanyan. We're now going to take a break and listen to some music and also a little bit of an interview. Just last Thursday, the William Sorain House Museum opened up its new hologram program and is just letting people know about it. So we're going to be listening to some a little bit about that as well.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Here with Barlow Dermagadichian, our host of our All Things Armenian on our Sunday show.
Yeah, we're out on a beautiful Thursday afternoon at the William Sorain House Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we're out at the William Sorain House Museum is because the museum is featuring its new exhibit new exhibit of a hologram. So mm-hmm. the hologram is a way to see William Saroyan, hear his voice, and to actually see him. We have three actors playing Saroyan at different ages. One is a child, one is a sort of a young man, and then one is an older Saroyan. Mm-hmm. And it's about a five-minute hologram, which kind of gives a life story, his philosophy, some of his writings, and some of his history.
Yeah, no, it was very cool. I just came out of the museum, got to see the hologram.
All right.
Very, very cool the way you guys were able to do that and talk to
Zar.
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot her name.
Yeah.
And she was telling me that was an actual interview from Saroyan. So it's his voice with the actors kind of acting out what he's saying and stuff. And she said that was a 6-hour interview that she did with a reporter. That was what blew me away the most, honestly. So you can talk 6 hours about just his whole life.
Yeah. So the Haas Museum was opened about a year and a half ago, and we've had great reaction from the community. But mm-hmm. we wanted to always keep things different, put new things in. So that's what we did and brought it here. And I think it's going to be a great addition. We want to get it out into the community.
Definitely.
If you've even been once before or twice before, come out again and see it.
Yeah, check out the hologram. It's definitely worth coming out for. And like I said, it's my first time going through there. So the picture wall that lights up as you walk across it, that was a very, very cool idea that you guys had there.
And you need to make reservations online at saroyanhouse.com. So the museum is open by reservation only. Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. You can go online. There are certain hours that you can get a tour if there's availability. Right now, it's free. Pretty soon, it may go up to something else. But right now, it's free to come out and see this William Saroyan House Museum.
Yeah, definitely come check it out. And if you do Google map it to figure out where you're going, do not worry. It is in the middle of a neighborhood. You are going to the right place.
That's right. It's that's where he lived.
Yeah,
so this is a great thing about
it. It's his own house. So. Yeah. Very cool. Well, Barlow, thanks for having
us
out.
All right.
Glad we were able to check it out.
Thanks. Great. Cool.
Welcome back to All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlow Demirgradich, and we were listening to a musical piece from Adam Khachaturian. It was the Lezginka from the Guyane Ballet, and that was performed by the Cadence Ensemble from their CD To My Yerevan. Our guest today is Reverend Nerses Balabanyan, and we've been talking about a little bit about his youth and the living in Aleppo, but then we ended up talking about him going to SMU. And my question is, how does that work in with the theology of the Congregational Church, or is that different, or is it, do you have to go also to an Armenian even if you went to get a master's degree?
Very good question. The Armenian Protestant Church does not have Baptist or, you know, within the Protestant, let's say, umbrella, or let me call it this way, Reformed umbrella. In America, you can find the Presbyterian, Baptist, Congregational, Methodist, Pentecostal church, and different kind of churches. Within the Armenian community, we don't have too many divisions like that. So, especially when I'm talking in Middle East, when where all started, the whole movement started in Constantinople, you know, it started in Bolis. So it was called Hayavdanagan Yegeretsi, the Armenian Evangelical Church. So the word evangelical is not the way it's used here. It's not, doesn't have a political institution. It's more Avedaranagan, the evangel, Vedarani Ibrahim Navas.
Bible, right.
The Bible,
right.
Avedaran, the good news, you know. So I was raised within a denomination there. Now, for our denomination to send someone to become a, like, you know, if you're an Arakelagan, you can do Echmiadzin or you can do Antilias. They have their seminaries, right? Our seminary was in Neri School of Theology in Beirut, because this seminary is historically was in Aintab. So from Aintab went to Greece, from Greece came to Beirut, and so it has an Armenian background. Well, missionaries were open seminaries. So because of the war in Lebanon, as I was mentioning, and because of my connections, because I was in Wesleyan tradition, I could apply to seminary, and I came and I studied. Now, while I was studying in the seminary, they did not give me any courses for Wesleyan tradition. I took the general courses of you know, Bible 101, New Testament, Old Testament. It doesn't matter what background you are, you know, you can take those courses. But as an Armenian evangelical, my union gave me some books to read or some, you know, or, you know, like, so I know my church is, our bylaws and so on and so on. We have AUNA in America, for example. It's 35 churches from New York all the way to Los Angeles. So Tsevoma Mer Hamainkne, it is our denomination.
So you could have been appointed to a Armenian Presbyterian Church, or a Armenian Congregational
Church. The reason we have those names, Pilgrim, Congregational or Presbyterian or and so on. When the Armenians came here to Fresno, they wanted to start Armenian Protest High Avdaragan Yegeretsi, but they couldn't. They because of the situation, the financial situation. So that's why they affiliated with UCC, United Church of Christ, or with the Presbyterians. So that's why you have. But eventually, those churches, they said, you're an autonomous church. You know, they gave you the freedom to. Even in Fresno, for example, we are not part of UCC.
You're not?
No, we're not. We're a completely independent church.
Completely independent?
Completely independent. Well, we belong to AUNA,
right,
which is Armenian Evangelical, North of America Church.
But as far as your own church, you...
As a church, we are not related with the Congregational Church. The same with the Presbyterian Church. They, you know, they have some affiliation with a Presbyterian church, but they're completely autonomous church.
But in other communities too, they have then, let's say in Los Angeles, there's United Armenian Congregational Church. Or Brotherhood Church.
That's a different church. Yeah. Brotherhood Church, they felt we are not conservative enough. They became off track of the Armenian...
A mainstream Armenian
evangelical. And they became Brotherhood Church. So the Armenian evangelical churches of United States or in Middle East, none of them are affiliated with any American church or European church. You know, do we have partnership with them? Of course. Do we work with them? Of course. Do they like our mission? Of course. You know, so there is a relationship in that way, but not theologically.
So I believe you started your first service in Beirut and Anjar, and then
All right, 1987, I graduated from SMU. Sevan and I are married for a year now. that time. So we said, okay, we have an invitation from Beirut to become a youth worker in Lebanon between five churches. There were five churches in Beirut and one in Anjar. They said, would you like to be our youth worker? Which means on Mondays, I'll go to Burj Hamoud, I'll do Bible study there. On Tuesday, I go to Ashrafieh and I do Bible study there. So each churches had their own youth. So I vitalized their youth work. That's biblical studies. On Sunday afternoons, I started Army Squire. There was an Army Squire, stopped. If you know Vache Barsoumian from Los Angeles.
A large group.
Vache Barsoumian is from Beirut. He established Army Squire. Armis is an Armenak Misirian, is an Armenian pastor who lived in Paris. And he was an artist. He was a Badveli, but an artist who wrote music, who painted. So we wanted to honor him. So we said Armis Choir, Armenak Misirian, Armis Choir. So it was a nice 60, 65 member choir that I rehearsed with them, preparing concerts, annual concerts, both sacred and secular music. Introducing to the congregation Armenian music, European music, or even some spirituals. Gides Kharnurt, as best Pama. Unfortunately, during this 1987, just think about the years, 88, 89, 90. This is the toughest time of the war. I mean, I will call it great finale of Lebanese Civil War.
And you were there.
I was there with Sevan.
Yeah.
So part of our job was, instead of rehearsing with choir, is to go around and see what are the needs of the community. So I will organize the youth. We call it water drive, which means we go to wells, get some waters, put it in, asen termosnerum echketenein, and we start going from home to home and give water.
Wow.
Next day, food drive, and so on. You know, you need to be practical to reach out to the community and try to help them to stand on their feet. But Barlow, I look back, I was afraid sometimes because bullets were going around you know. But I look back and I thank God for those days that it was like a seminary, a new seminary. We'll call it life seminary, you know, like teaching you. It was very interesting. Here I am in Dallas, Texas, Highland Park. Average income is $100,000 in 1986, 87. And I go to Beirut where the civil war is going on. Bullets are flying over me. And I'm thinking about the books that I read and the theology I did. What's the relevance? How in the world that can apply? But, you know, God had an interesting way of preparing me to go and serve the community and shape my character. To know how to work with the community in that tough situation.
Then your pastoral work here in the United States, of course, you're dealing with sometimes Armenians that have been in America for two or three generations, even four generations. My question is really about how you see Armenian-ness and also the Christianity. I mean, some people try to separate it out and they say, well, you know, you shouldn't say you're Armenian because you're Christians first, but how do you see that? How does that work in for you?
Wow, this is a heavy, big question. Yeah. Let me start this way. I was surprised that Pilgrim Church hired me as pastor because I am not an American Armenian. I'm an Armenian American. You know, you understand the difference, right? Because I wasn't born here. I wasn't raised here. My language, my English has an accent. And, you know, I think in Armenian and when I'm translating in, and sometimes my sentences comes very funny while I'm preaching. So I looked at the congregation, it's going over their head. So, you know, but I think there is a reason God brought me, my wife and I, to Fresno especially to this church, which is very Americanized Armenian church. The Armenian language is almost nothing, almost zero, you know, very few times. Well, there is Higher Mayor, singing Higher Mayor, and so on. And sometimes, you know, so when I came, I said, okay, I want to start new chapter in this church. And first of all, we put a screen. So all my sermons, all our songs are projected with two languages, English and Armenian. Every slide I put with reading from the scripture, it's going to be Armenian and English. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that's very... Second, when I'm preaching, I always use Armenian words. And I... Gmatsenem gehanem, mutkev yelk. You know, just short sentences. Barlow, you will be surprised how many American Armenians are coming and saying, can you say more Armenian words? Mm. You are reminding me my grandfather. You're reminding me my parents. They used to talk Armenian, so we don't understand, they said. You know, Kakhni Pambit Hossein, Hayrengu Hossein. You know, they spoke Armenian. So there is an awakening in our culture, in our church, to hear in Armenian scripture. So that's a nice awakening. Now, I have a group of Armenians from Armenia and Middle East. They love to hear that in Armenian. So that's an interesting change, let me say, or approach in the service to bring some awakening towards the Armenian language or Armenian music.
But as I see it, you don't see a problem with... I
thought it would be a problem.
Yeah.
And I was wondering why in the world they're bringing me, because, you know... But I think it started... First, I gained the trust of my congregation. They love me, and I love them. That's a good start. Mm-hmm. Once you win their heart, I think you can start introducing things to them. You need to be careful. Don't overdo it. You will kill it, you know. Gamats. You know, just start bringing some ideas. And in my sermons, I bring a lot of examples from Middle East, from where we grew up, from Aleppo, from Anjar, from Beirut. So they hear stories, and they hear from a pastor, and it was interesting. Someone can say to the Badveli, I have heard many sermons, but your sermons are from Middle Eastern perspective. You read the Bible from Aleppo, from Middle East. You see things differently than someone who was born in America looking to the Bible. So, which is true. I mean, we have cultural... If you say to someone, do you know shepherd? How many people know what is shepherd? Hoviv Inche.
Exactly.
Seriously, ask this question to anyone. My wife teaches piano. She asked, what is shepherd? She said, German shepherd. They're talking about the dog. And don't blame them. I mean, how many shepherds they have seen? Yeah. Well, how do you understand the Lord? Derim Hovivase. How do you explain Psalm 23? Right. The Lord is my shepherd. So there's a lot of Middle Eastern culture. Bible was not written in Dallas, Texas. I keep saying that. Kedesh, the Dallas Sinera Bible Belt Kagarzin. They're the Bible Belt.
That's right.
All right, fine. But Asvazort Neirens, Bible was written in Middle East. So the culture of Middle East is an important part to understand the Word of God. I believe in that. I believe very much. That's why we should take tours. I wish Syria becomes a safe place that we take a tour to biblical lands.
Jerusalem too.
Jerusalem, Syria, Lebanon.
I mean, I've always looked at it that, and I think some people have lost this, but the idea that Christianity was preached all over the world. Mm-hmm. It happened to come to Armenia. So the best way to preach Christianity was in Armenian, and then it adopted Armenian characteristics to it, but it was still Christianity, but it was Armenian characteristics. So you can't really separate the two. I mean, some people want to just separate it completely. I don't think you have to reject Armenianness to be a good Christian. Yeah, that's the way I kind of look at it. Yeah, we're all right.
Oh, we have 1 minute. Yeah. Definitely, our language, Mesrop Mashlot, has an important part. And, you know, when the alphabet was created so we can read our Bible Hayrenov. Mm-hmm. We want to read in Armenian.
Right.
How beautiful is that?
Right.
How many cultures, you know, that their alphabet was created so they can read the Bible in their language?
Right.
Right. So Armenians have that. So we should not take for granted our language, our culture. Because I think reading something in a language, each language that you learn, because I speak many languages, I think I become a different person.
Right.
Every language I learn, it makes me a different person.
And it really brings a wealth to Christianity as well.
Yes.
My guest is Reverend Narcis Balabanian. We're going to take another brief break, and then we'll be back for our last segment.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
How's it going, everyone, here at the William Saroyan House Museum here in Fresno? It's Justice, by the way. Forgot to say that here with Multicultural 1600 AM for All Things Armenian. I am here with
Salpi Adams.
Salpi Adams. She just came out of the museum. So what was it like?
I had been here before. It was interesting. But this time, this new hologram is much clearer. It's very nice. You can see him when he was older, when he was a young kid, and when he was an adult.
Okay, so
the hologram.
Yeah, it takes you through kind of his life.
Yeah.
That's cool, cool. And is it interactive? Is it just...
No, you watch that one, but there is the pictures on the other side where you can see different pictures. As you walk, it lights up, and you can see the pictures of his life.
Okay, okay. Yeah. And then, yeah, we just saw you outside taking a picture with him. Did you do that before, or is it the first time?
Well, no, last time I came, there were like maybe 40 students, so they were taking pictures, so I waited, and this time I have it.
Yeah, so it's actually a circle that brings up a virtual reality version of William Saroyan.
William Saroyan, yeah.
She got to put her arm around. It was pretty cool to see that.
That was nice, yeah.
All right, well, thank you for taking the time.
No
talking
problem.
About it with us.
Welcome back to All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlow Dermagradichian. Over the break, we were listening to Nubar Nubar, performed by the Cadence Ensemble on their CD, To My Yerevan. We really enjoy the music of Cadence Ensemble. And then, once again, we had a brief interview that was done on Thursday at the Saroyan House Museum, which is introducing some new features. If you're out in the community and have not been to the Saroyan House Museum, it's your opportunity to do so. And if you've already been, you should go again because some things have changed. My guest today is Reverend Narcis Balabanian. Thank you for being with us, Bavili.
Thank you, Barlo.
And we were started our show with Aleppo, and this last section I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the changes that are taking place that we don't hear about, some of the positive changes that are taking place.
Very positive things happening. I have a brother there still, and his wife and children and grandchildren. I would say around $8,000 to $10,000Armenians, $8,000 to $10,000 Armenians, I think. We don't have a statistic. Right. Unfortunately, it's a smaller number than I presented to you when we were in 80s or 70s. But I am always in touch with the community there and with the pastors and so on. First of all, the Aleppo airport is open. So that's a very, very good sign. After 10 years, just think about it, Aleppo airport. Yeah. So the flights can start from Yerevan. Flights from Damascus, from Dubai, and you know, different flights are planning to come. So this is a good news. The second good news: the road from Aleppo to Damascus, which you took 1985, that road, which is 3.5 hours from Damascus, Yerekari Sun kilometer, 350 kilometers, will be. How much miles will
about
do
200
that?
200 miles.
200 miles, something like that.
To LA.
Yeah, exactly. So that road. It was taking 7 hours or 5-6 hours because the insurgent pro-ISIS people took that Idlib area close to Aleppo between Hama and Homs and Aleppo. That main highway was cut. So what they should do? They should drive towards east of Syria, of Aleppo, which is very much desertish. Like Deir Zori base, and then they go south, and then go to. So that was taking a long road. It's not a highway; it's a very dangerous road. So that road is open. So I saw yesterday, just yesterday, I saw buses, Damascus, the buses that you were telling me that you took. Those buses are now between Damascus and Aleppo. So those are good news, but my problem. How long this is going to stay like that? Is the airport going to be safe? You know, and so on. So it's a hopeful situation that is coming in Syria. The other thing that I like to talk about Syria that you don't see on the news, on CNN or Fox or ABC, CBS, is the life in Syria in general. For example, in Damascus, there is a Philharmonic. The conductor is an Armenian of the Damascus Philharmonic. Every other week, like Fresno Philharmonic, they give concerts. Okay, so go and listen. They have wonderful repertoire, and they play concerts. In Aleppo, there are now two choirs, active Armenian choirs: Zvartnots Choir, which belongs to Hamaskayin, and Spenterian Choir, which belongs to AGBU. Both are active. AGBU has a string quartet or a string ensemble. You know how difficult in Aleppo to get a string ensemble right now? But here's the good news. There were three schools, music schools in Aleppo, functioning during the war. When the electricity goes away, what else you can do? Practice violin, practice cello, practice piano, because they don't need electricity. So it's interesting to see how culture, how music was a therapy for so many people during the war in Syria.
So are there any actual bombs dropping or bullets going by in Aleppo itself?
Right now, no. But if you're asking me like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, surrounding Aleppo, especially on north and east, towards Turkey's side, towards Idlib side, they were the government was trying to gain those territories back. Of course, it's not going to be peaceful. There were a lot of
Many Armenians moved to Armenia. Many Armenians from Aleppo or from Syria. What's your experience with that? Do you have any?
I do know some people. I know friends. Some of them did very well. They adjusted themselves there. You need to understand Armenia. Armenia, our motherland, has its own problems. You know, economic problems, to start a job, to start a restaurant or a factory. It has its own challenges in Armenia. So Armenians of Syria, when they went to Armenia, they're hardworking. Ashad Aseren, you know, they like to work. So some of them did adjust and found a job, like many restaurants opened and things. Some of them couldn't, and they couldn't they felt they're not, maybe this is not, they feel this is their mm-hmm. land, but they don't speak the same language and so on. So some of them came back.
They couldn't adapt.
I think so. They couldn't adapt.
A different culture.
It's a different culture. It's a different mentality. Yeah. So they couldn't adapt. So they came, they went back. They returned back to Aleppo. So that's good. But many, many left to Canada. Canada was one of the major countries that opened immigration.
And that's one of the tragedies of Aleppo, because Aleppo was up until this period of the war, one of the major Armenian
hub
diaspora communities, and it was close to old Armenia. I mean, it's only what, how
it
far
takes
is it?
50 minutes from Aleppo to Yerevan plane.
But how about to cross the Turkish border? It's close, right?
60 kilometers, 40 miles.
You get to Kilis, and then
Mekgodor Kilis Kometnes, right? You know, and like Aintep, that's
and it. And then you're right into historic Kilikia and into Armenia. So it was so important because you had that large
presence
number
of the, oh, yes.
And
yes.
The schools and all of the other things.
I mean, remember Aleppo, like Karasum Manukya Gelsi, let me give you. It's 450 years old church. It's before the massacre.
Right.
So the Armenian community of Aleppo is an old community. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like Mia massacre in Amar Honchain. You know, they were.
So are there other good signs of life happening? I mean, some people are moving back, a few, and
Barlow, it's complicated.
Yeah.
Look to Lebanon. Lebanon is going through economic crisis right now. That's affecting Syria again. So the whole region is a boiling pot.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, you have Russia and Iran, and you know. On the other hand, you have Saudi Arabia, Turkey, United States, and you know, different powers are playing their political games on those lands.
Right.
Then you have the Sunni Shiite conflict. I mean, right.
It's complicated.
Let's not. We're not going to solve Syrian problem. We are worried as Armenian. What will be our
But let's talk about your grandfather, so Sarkis Foja Balabanyan. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because you recently republished his
memoir
in English. Tell us briefly a little bit about what it was and why it was important for your family. To
Balaban Hoca was educator, was a survivor of genocide who helped so many children to be rescued. His memoirs are extremely interesting to read. I mean, if you take the book, you cannot finish it. I mean, you will finish it in one spot because mm-hmm. one story after each other is like a bestseller mm-hmm. movie. The way he wrote it was very interesting. It was in Armenian. So our children, the new generation, they said, Dad, few people will know about him mm-hmm. if we don't translate to English. In fact, my niece was very much active in this. So we did translate, and then someone edited, so made it more smooth English. So you don't want to, you know, Haygagan Guzes were Anklerena, you know. So finally we published it. So it's a good book. Excuse me.
Yes.
I think he will be happy if he was alive,
right.
Because whenever we sell the book, the money goes to AMAA, and there is a Balaban Hoca fund, because he wants no child to be without education. That's my grandfather's dream, was every Armenian should go to school, university, not only school,
right.
Needs to be educated. I think the survival society from the genocide, they had, as I said, in their pocket there was only onion or bread, sohev hatskeller.
That's right.
But they said, I want to see you go to university. Right. So,
well, my guest today has been Reverend Nerses Balabanyan. He's the pastor of the Pilgrim Armenian Congregational Church here in Fresno. And we had a great conversation about a lot of different things. And for Christian Armenians, today is the Sunday of Good Living, Pun Parigentan in Armenian.
Yes.
And starting tomorrow in the Armenian Apostolic Church will be the beginning of Lent, leading up to Easter later in April. So a lot of things will be happening in that period as well. And again, in terms of the Armenian Studies Program, we have lots of activities. Once again, It might be of interest really for the community to think about coming out to the Armenian American Musical Heritage Day, which is going to be taking place on Saturday, February the 29th, where people are going to be bringing records, especially of Prof. Kalfayan. Prof. Kalfayan was a very important figure here in the early 20th century in Fresno, and he actually composed his own versions of the Badarak and other kinds of music. So it's going to be a music day, and if you're interested in hearing music, you can come out at 3:30 to listen to Richard Hagopian on the oud. But it's not just a performance. He'll be having a discussion with Dr. Yektan Turkilmaz, who is actually a Turkish citizen, but he's of Kurdish origin. And what he has done is he's working on the Armenian Studies Program record catalog. So we have over 1,000 records at the Armenian Studies Program that we are cataloging, and he's helping us do that. So that's going to be, again, on Saturday, February the 29th at the University Business Center. Also on Thursday, March 5th, just around the corner also, will be a lecture, the second lecture by Dr. Ari Shakarian. This is also very interesting because it talks about the period right after the genocide, the armistice period after the First World War. And his talk is going to be on the survivors, Armenian orphans and refugees after the First World War. And it's the period of 1918 to 1923. So he had given his first lecture just about 2 weeks ago. Very interesting. These are all open and public, open to the public. And then just jumping way ahead to April, we got a very interesting film that we're sharing with Cineculture called What Will Become of Us. It's a story, it's a one-hour documentary about six Armenian families in the United States and how they are dealing with the after effects of the genocide, their grandchildren of genocide survivors. That'll be at 5:30 p.m. on Friday, April the 17th. Well, thank you for joining us on All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlow Dermogradichian, and we'll see you next week on All Things Armenian.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Este fue un programa pagado y solo refleja la opinión de sus anunciantes. Ahora continúa disfrutando de la programación de 1600 AM.